Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, December 20th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, tomorrow is the first official day of winter, so today we welcome News Channel 13 meteorologist Jason Goff back to the airwaves to answer all of your questions about the season and the weather. And we welcome your calls right now. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Meteorologist Jason Goff. Wind chills, snow drifts, maybe even the odd polar vortex. Your calls are coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow is the first day of winter. Joining us on the show today to talk about the weather and take your questions is meteorologist Jason Goff of News Channel 13 in Albany. His forecasts, well, you've seen them for years. You've heard them right here. He is always a favorite on this program. Best advice is to get in early. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551, the number if you have a question. You may also email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you wish. Again, we'll get to as many emails as we can. But the number to call, and there are a couple of lines open right now, 800-348-2551. Jason Goff, happy holidays. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, sir. Great to see you, as always.
Tomorrow, it begins officially.
Yeah, first day of summer tomorrow. Southern Hemisphere, you know.
Well, there you go.
In the great Northeast, yes. Well, we were in the low 50s yesterday, so that's not too bad.
But not so tomorrow.
No, sir.
And then much colder next week.
Yes, especially in the middle of the country. They're talking about potentially, at least the way that the models are talking, potentially record high pressure.
And so what does that mean? So very cold temperatures?
Just very, like, one of those days where there's not a cloud in the sky, really high pressure, which means generally, especially up in places like Minnesota and the Dakotas, Nebraska, cold.
So radiational cooling all night and then doesn't warm up much after that.
That's right. And then when you add a snowpack into the equation, that makes it even colder, like a little extra refrigeration.
Speaking of snow, my children and my wife continually pester me about whether it's going to be white. Like I have anything to do with it, whether it's going to be a white Christmas or not. What do you think?
Well, the forecasts have been kind of fluid over the last couple of days, but even over the last couple of weeks. You know, we sort of open up the door. I always say that on the air. Like, you open up the door, just allows the opportunity for a storm to show up. There already have been a couple of coastal storms, but we haven't had any, if all, or perhaps just a little bit of an effect from them and down to our south and east. But basically, that's what we're talking about, like just having that open up. And so there's a lot of moving parts. So getting into the day on Friday, a little bit of some snow. Then on Saturday, we're talking about rain for pretty much everybody, even in the entire WAMC listening area, which is a lot bigger than our viewing area. So it just looks to be windy and, I don't want to say mild, but upper 40s and wet.
That's pretty warm.
It is.
We often talk when you're on this program about the difficulty in predicting the weather 3, 4, 5, 6 days out.
Yes.
And I always wondered, is it more volatile and difficult when there is more energy in the atmosphere in the summer?
Yes, that's a great question, and you're right. I mean, our most challenging time to forecast is the wintertime, only because really of coastal systems, because they kind of do whatever the heck they feel like doing, it seems like sometimes, you know, and models will change. Sometimes we're even watching these things evolve on the fly and just and adjusting snowfall amounts from there or whatever. But you're right. There's more – things just get more active in the winter. Everything speeds up. The wind speeds up. These dips in the jet stream. I see we have a call here about an upper trough, which we'll talk about.
In a minute, yeah.
So, yeah, things like that get going. But in the summer, just like people, if you want to relate it to that, everybody just kind of slows down. The weather slows down, too. So that's how you can get stretches, certainly late summer into fall, which is typically our best time. I've had people ask me this before, and it's a good question. Hey, if I'm going to get married in upstate New York or western New England, what is the best time to do it? And I always tell people, like, mid-September, man, that is the way to go, because you're never guaranteed good weather,
right,
but that you have the best opportunity or the best odds for good weather at that time, because everything is starting to shift. It's almost like, a fish on the Hudson River, and you're fishing like a slack tide, so the tide is going out or coming in, and you have that period of time in between where nothing really happens. That's kind of the way that works.
What's the best weather to get divorced?
The best weather to get divorced?
Yeah, the best time of year.
Uh-oh. I don't know.
All right. Let's go right to the phones. 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest, and Elliot is first in Sharon Springs. Elliot, you're on.
Jason, how are you?
I'm fine, sir. Thank you.
Hey, look, I'm an old guy, and I grew up with the weather maps with lows and highs and cold fronts and hot and warm fronts. And now I hear in the weather things like upper-level trough and a high-level high or low. I don't get that stuff.
Well, no, it's a good question. So what you're talking about seeing are surface, what we call surface features. You're looking at a surface map, which is obviously quite relevant to our weather. But weather doesn't just happen at the surface. It happens throughout the column of the atmosphere, if you think of it as such. So we look at the atmosphere in slices. More specifically, we look at the atmosphere in levels of pressure. So it's not necessarily a function of altitude, although for airline pilots, you know, altitude and air pressure are pretty similar, right? So basically what you're looking at is an upper level trough is in essence, it can be a couple of different things, but a trough is it's difficult to explain without showing it on the air because that's what I'm used to doing.
Well, just gesticulate anyway.
But basically what you're looking at is a kink in the jet stream and it sags down to the south in one part. And we've seen that already quite a bit from basically the beginning of this month, where that trough will swing all the way down to maybe the mid-Atlantic or even farther down to the south, even through the deep south, where they had snow down there and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
So it all has to do with the jet stream. And in essence, what it does is it kind of acts like a bowl. Think of it like that. And it allows that colder air to drain down into our area or wherever the case may be. But also with that troughiness, as we call it, you have an opportunity for storms to evolve or to develop further, whatever you want to do. So that's basically what that is, Elliot. You're talking about the atmosphere being in layers, and storms happen not just at the surface, but at all levels of the atmosphere.
Elliot, thanks for the call. Our number here with Jason Goff is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. So I was thumbing through the Old Farmer's Almanac the other day, which I love every year. I read it every year. I don't want to get my facts incorrect, but I think they claim about 80% accuracy on their weather.
Oh, they are masters at verification.
So how would you quantify that?
I don't know, man. It's funny. I went to over to the Masonic Lodge in Troy, the community center over there, and a woman asked me about the Farmer's Almanac. And look, the Farmer's Almanac is great if you want things like little tidbits about the full moon names and where they come from and all that stuff. But when it comes down to actual forecasts, it's just not good. It's just not good.
But if you think about it, going back 200 years or whenever it began, pretty advanced stuff that this guy said, well, sunspots have something to do with this. And of course they do.
Yeah, but you're right. And certainly, you know, back in the day, especially, and even now, of course, farmers know more about weather than just about anybody else on the planet.
Yep.
But you're talking about an atmosphere that has so much stuff going on. I mean, we just talked about it a minute ago. It's difficult to forecast 3, 4, 5, 6 days out.
Yep.
How in the heck are you going to forecast for an entire season or an entire year for an entire region? It just doesn't work. And I'll give you a good example. A couple of years ago, they had basically the Southern Plains, which Oklahoma and Texas, because Texas is such a big state.
Mm-hmm.
Texas was going to be wet and cool in the summer. So immediately you look at that and you go, what?
Mm.
And then, to boot, Waco, Texas and Dallas, Texas, both that year set records for consecutive 100-degree days, and they went from a moderate drought to an exceptional drought. Man, you can't get any more wrong than that. I'm sorry, you just can't.
All right.
So however they want to kind of, you know, well verify, you know, hey, you're going to have a coastal storm between January 9th and 15th, well, a second grader can come up with that. You know, and I'm not disparaging them. I'm just saying, like, It's people put stock into it for a forecast, and they really shouldn't.
All right, Jason Goff, our number is 800. Sorry I asked.
Nope.
800-348-2551 is the number, and we go over to Paul in Saratoga Springs. Paul.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What I was interested in, if there's a ratio between like 1 degree of ocean warming and the intensity of hurricanes and hurricane season, if there's any sort of ratio.
No, it would make things a heck of a lot easier if we were able to put things on a linear scale. But when it comes to forecasting and all of the variables that go into it, there's a lot more to it than just the oceans warming. Now, I have read some things about especially this hurricane season that we're just coming out of, which was awful.
Yeah.
You're looking at four storms that are going to have their names retired, and that's not a good thing.
Right.
And certainly there are some evidence there that if these hurricanes, if everything was the exact same, but it had happened 50 years ago when the oceans weren't as warm as they were now, then they wouldn't have been as strong. Harvey in particular was the article that I read about. There's lots and lots going on as far as all of this stuff goes with global warming and climate change. The other piece that I'll tell you real quickly, when I was also over at the Masonic Lodge, somebody was very nice, and he was just kind of ribbing me, and he said, you know, tell me about global warming. And I could tell he was a quote-unquote skeptic.
Yeah.
And I wanted to short-circuit that. Just like we do on this program, we try not to talk about global warming and climate change here because this is a show about weather. We can talk about that in another segment if we want.
Right.
But the point is that I said, well, do you believe that we landed on the moon? And he said, yeah. I said, well, then you better believe global warming, because if you don't, you're along the same lines as those who say
flat earth
and we didn't land on the moon. Come on, man.
All right, Paul, thanks for the call. We're going to take a quick break here. Jason Goff is our guest. 800-348-2551. Oh, there it is. Some Christmas music, some winter music. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Rick Orlando's New World Home Cooking, Saugerties, New York. Since 1993, hosting a New Year's Eve buffet and dance party, newworldhomecooking.com for reservations. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the documentary Joaquin Prinz, I Shall Not Be Silent, in honor of Martin Luther King Day, Monday, January 15th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai, 518-584-8730 for reservations. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang. And Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 15 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins, grapesandgrainswine.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. We're joined today by meteorologist Jason Goff, and our number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Jason, this one came in via email at voxpop@wamc.org from Bob. And this is the question: how wide is the jet stream, and what makes it move?
The jet stream varies in terms of its width. But you're talking about 150 miles or so
wide,
and yes, and at times, you know, and it does tend to shrink and it moves here and there. The other thing that really influences the jet stream is the ocean, right? I mean, oceans, plural. But for our purposes, you think about the Pacific, and that's why you get pattern changes when you have an El Nino year or a La Nina year, because everything is connected on the planet, right? So you have a lot of interaction between the water and the air, and that will tend to drive kinks into the jet stream, the troughs that we were talking about, or a big up what we've called an upper level ridge, where the jet stream will scoot way to the north, and we get, especially in the summertime, those are the days where we get into the 90s and it's really humid and that sort of thing. So basically the jet stream, just kind of think about it like a belt, really, of air. It's like its own little river of air within the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And the wind speeds in the jet stream vary. Generally, they roll from west to east, and then you'll get these pockets in there where the winds will be really strong, and that also can enhance weather. It can enhance winter weather. It can enhance severe weather. In the plains, they're always, you know, concerned about these so-called jet maxes, where you might have winds that are 120 miles an hour in these little pockets within the jet stream itself.
What is the average speed, wind speed of the jet stream?
I probably learned that in one meteorology 101, but it's, you know, you're talking maybe 50, 60 miles an hour. It can be higher. And in summertime, it can be a little lower, certainly if it's, you know, as it's driven a little farther to the north. But the jet stream is actually discovered in World War II by fighter pilots, because it sits up. And again, the height of it also varies, but let's say for our purposes, about 35,000 feet. So when the pilots were flying west, they were running into a headwind.
Yeah. You're
like, man, I'm burning an awful lot of fuel here. And the opposite happens when they were flying east. They're picking up time and not so driving, or they're flying faster and not burning as much fuel.
And the variation of altitude of this, of the jet stream,
it does vary. And you know, you can see that in the daily soundings and things like that. But generally speaking, you're talking anywhere from 30 to 40,000 feet.
How low has it ever gotten? Has it ever hit the deck?
Oh no! It's hauling. It's moving too fast, and it's going to stay put way above our heads.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Jason Goff is our guest. 800-348-2551. John in Williamstown. John, you're on.
Hello, John.
Goodbye, John. All right, thank you very much for that.
He was on for a while. Sorry,
yes,
John.
He was. Well, call back. Peter in West Warren, Massachusetts. Peter, you're on.
Hey. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I see hurricanes, when they get up to New England, they kind of get weaker in intensity. And then during the winter, we have our nor'easters, which kind of, when they start coming up, they increase in intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Why is there such a difference?
Yeah,
that's a good question. And the answer is that they are two, even though they're very similar in appearance, and actually nor'easters overall, just because of the frequency of them as compared to hurricanes, they do a lot more coastal damage than hurricanes do. You see cuts, and I see pictures all the time from, like, I follow the great white sharks feed in from Chatham, Massachusetts, and they'll put, you know, pictures up, and, oh, we got a new cut today from this nor'easter or whatever. But, man, I'm talkative today. I better start to answer these questions.
It's a talk show. Feel free.
So the deal is, Peter, you're talking about two completely different mechanisms. Hurricanes and tropical systems are what we call warm core systems. Nor'easters are what we call cold core systems. And sometimes you can even hear about their transition from a tropical to an extratropical and a post-tropical, which to most of our viewers and listeners, they don't really care. A storm is a storm.
Post-tropical is just an enhanced low-pressure system?
A post-tropical is one that has made that transition from a warm core system to a cold core system. So it's getting extra energy from the atmosphere, maybe from the jet stream, maybe from a front that is dying off along the coast, and that can help to spin up a storm or something like that. You can get nor'easters that develop that way. But a post-tropical system means that it is no longer deriving its energy from the warm water of the ocean, but it is getting its energy from someplace else. And it could be a trough. It could be the jet stream that's helping to enhance it in that sense. So that's a great question. And that's basically what it is. It's that even though they look similar and they do nasty things, if you happen to be in their way, they are made of two different mechanisms.
All right, Peter, thanks for the call. As far as the total aggregate energy of the average hurricane compared to the average nor'easter, which is more powerful?
Oh, the hurricane is for sure, because you're talking about a lot of these hurricanes are born of what is called latent heat.
Yeah.
And so when the latent heat of condensation, so for a drop of water to condense, you know, or you know, water vapor to condense into a drop of water, it has to release heat. So you're talking about an incredible amount of energy, and in essence, the storm kind of feeds on itself. It becomes a real efficient engine, so long as it's not getting ripped apart by wind shear, and that it has enough warm water to deal with.
It's amazing that nor'easters and blizzards in general can pack such a wallop. I mean, I've been in blizzards where the winds were 80 miles an hour.
Yes.
And it's cold.
It is cold, yep. But again, those storms get their energy from different sources as opposed to, you know, over the warm waters. And that's typically why, although this year wasn't so much the case, but that's typically why Pacific tropical systems, be they cyclones or typhoons or Pacific hurricanes, are stronger, because they just have more open water, so they have more fuel.
Jason Goff is our our guest. Our number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a weather question for a real-life meteorologist, 800-348-2551. We'll go to Tano in Liberty, New York. You're on.
Hi. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Hi, Ray. Good Hi. Show, Ray.
Thank you.
Jason, thank you very much for your the job well done. Anyway, two questions, Jason. One, specifically when you talk about, I live in Sullivan County, Liberty, New York.
Uh-huh.
You never say Liberty, New York or Sullivan County. It's like the Hudson Valley. I don't understand it. Specifically when I'm listening to your forecast, I want to know whether it's going to snow in my area or not, because where I am, it could be a blizzard a mile up the road and I have sunny weather, or I'm blizzard and, you know how the Hudson, the Catskill Mountains are.
Yes. That's a problem for every broadcaster when you have a big area to broadcast in only a limited amount of time. All right, go ahead with your second part.
And the second part is I've heard several people describe that they live at the foot of the Catskill Mountains. I'm now confused as to where the Catskill Mountains begin or end. And anyway, that's my questions.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, I guess, a little bit closer to home for us, because Sullivan County is not in the News Channel 13 viewing area. It is obviously in the WAMC listening area. So, you know, when you think of the Catskills, you think about Ulster County, Delaware County, Greene County. And so the foothills, I guess, you know, maybe a place like Caro down 23 and Leeds and some of those spots as you make your way down to Greene County, those would be considered the foothills because you're down, you know, basically as soon as you get out of the Hudson Valley, you start to get into the Catskills.
But I think the overarching question here, and thank you for that call, we appreciate it, is how does one broadcasting, and regardless of the size of the Channel 13 broadcast cone, it's still a large amount, and there are great variations. How do you do an average sort of to fit the time that you have and make it accurate enough that Tano in Liberty says, okay, it's pretty close, and so-and-so near Plattsburgh says, okay, that's pretty close?
It's challenging because, you know, we do have limited time as far as what we can do on the air. Now, granted, if there's a storm that's coming that requires more time for us to be had on the air than our producers give it to us.
Right.
The idea with weather, I mean, ideally with weather, if the weather was really quiet, you know, our weather segment may only be a minute. That doesn't happen usually because, you know, there's always things to talk about.
Yep.
But if you think about it that way, where, you know, if the weather's a quiet day in the middle of the summer where it's been dry and it will continue to stay dry, you know, you can get by with a minute and saying, hey, folks, this is the deal. But in the wintertime, when you're talking about having a potential nor'easter, which it is, and I wish I had the stats for this, but certainly more than half the time, it seems, as a forecaster in this area, we don't have a solid precip type across the entire area. Once in a while it happens, and that's great because that makes it easier to forecast. But then when you're starting to talk about where the position of this thing is going to be and who's going to get rain, who's going to get sleet and snow, if you want to just completely destroy a snow forecast, put about an hour and a half of sleet in there and you're like, oh, man. So that's just the way that it goes.
And it's very difficult. I'll tell you this. Every morning we have this sort of mental gymnastics where, you know, I have a forecast given to us by a meteorologist, and I know that down lower Westchester, it's not going to be the same as in Plattsburgh, so I have to make it a little more vague. And at what point does it get where it's not really worth all that much?
Well, you know, for you guys, you're talking about, you know, a huge area.
And yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot of real estate between Plattsburgh and lower part of Westchester, so you just have to afford the time to kind of let people
know.
And
then
in
Utica, it snows until July.
Yeah, pretty much is what it seems like sometimes, yes.
Jason Goff is our guest, a News Channel 13 meteorologist. Our number is 800-348-2555. 1-800-348-2551. We go to Ed in Albany. Ed, you're on.
Yeah, hey, I know this is a program on weather, but I happen to be a retired geologist, and I give the occasional talk on climate change, you know, which is indeed real.
Yes.
And you've brought up the idea, you know, you've brought up climate change a number of times, but you've always fused it with the word believe. And believe, you know, isn't appropriate when it comes to science, you know, when it comes to something that is scientifically based.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir, Ed. I couldn't agree more.
I know, I'm taking advantage, I guess, of the radio station to say this, that, you know, if you say you believe in something, that's appropriate for religion or politics.
Right.
And you can't say to someone, you know, your religion or politics are wrong. But you can end up saying, well, okay, this is scientifically based.
Okay.
Right.
And someone can indeed say, well, you're wrong on that, and you'll say, well, let me correct this.
Okay.
No,
I agree completely with what you're saying, and my response to anybody that says these sorts of things, not what you're saying, but just my stance is that science is not a deli. You can't pick and choose what you want. Science is supposed to, by the scientific method, the virtue of it, you're supposed to let things play out.
Yeah.
The problem is that where we've gotten with all of this global warming and climate change, and it's become a philosophical issue.
And a
political issue. And what happens then is that you just get an absolute mess. That's why Copernicus was thrown in jail, and he was right anyway.
Yeah.
So it just drives me nuts.
Giordano Bruno burned at the stake, right?
Right. I mean, it's just, you know, you have to let science play out, and there are agendas on both sides of this argument, and to me, I wish everybody would just, to be frank, shut up about it, sit back, look at the numbers, and let things play out. And by the way, we have the technology to burn cleaner fuels and to do whatever it is that we're going to do, solar, wind, and all of that. Let's use it. It
right.
certainly can't hurt.
Let's go over to Kathy in Albany. Kathy, you're on with Jason Goff.
Hi there. I'm going to switch the topic completely away from politics. Let's talk
Good.
About summer storms for a second.
Oh, my Lovely. Favorite. I love it. Thank you, Kathy.
All right. So I have two questions, really.
Yeah.
Why are some storms full of lightning that just stays in the clouds, and others are full of cloud-to-ground lightning, and I watch it on the lightning strike map. And my other question is, sometimes we see these big storms spin up, and I watch them on the radar, and sometimes they get big and bad, and they put out a lot of rain and a lot of wind, and mm-hmm. other times they just die off. And it doesn't seem to be related to the time of day. I'm just wondering, is it upper atmospheric conditions that govern these things?
Yes. In essence, yes. You know, there are a lot of moving parts when it comes to thunderstorms. To answer your first question about cloud to ground lightning versus, you know, lightning that stays within the clouds, basically what allows lightning to discharge from the cloud to the ground is building up enough of a what we call a potential difference between the cloud and the ground. Because air is a very poor conductor of electricity. It's an insulator. So you've got to really build up a lot of potential in order for that to happen. So those storms have to get going. Then as far as, you know, the rain and in the amount of rain, a lot of that has to do really with the dew points. You know, if you have a thunderstorm when the dew point is 58 or a dew point when the thunderstorm when the dew point is 72, you're going to get a lot heavier rain with that dew point of 72.
Okay, I'll watch for that. Thank you so much.
All right,
Kathy,
you're welcome.
Thanks a lot for the call. Jason Goff is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Bennett in Newburgh. Bennett, you're on.
Yes, I'd like to pick up on what the caller before last said about the fact that you don't just believe, but you know about climate change. And there's, I think, a conclusion to be drawn from that might be a little bit controversial, but I'd like to get your opinion on it. I think I already know, Jason, what you think about this, but I'm going to state it again. You earlier mentioned that this is a show about weather,
not
about climate change.
Right.
Well, here's my bone of contention with that distinction. We have, if you know that climate change is real, and if you know that it could have extremely damaging effects, and if you know about the urgency of people being aware of this and acting on this, I believe that it's incumbent upon weathermen to, every now and then, not every day, give a statistic about global average global temperature.
Okay.
Talk about global warming. And here's why. Let me just say, and I'll get off the phone, but this is the thing. When you just talked about how there's muddledness, and the woman before you, just before said, I want to change the subject from politics and applying that global warming is a political conversation. And the reason for that, in large part, is because the media has done a horrible job of reminding people of this and letting people know what's going on. And I believe that in part it has to do with the paid media. It has to do with commercial interests not wanting to advertise on shows that mention climate change.
Let's let Jason respond.
That's important. So what's your thought on that?
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, no, the deal is that, you know, first of all, as Ray and I just talked about, we have a limited amount of time anyway to discuss weather. If weather, by definition, is what you experience when you walk out the door, climate is an average of the weather in the past. So they are completely different things. Now, yes, I have graphs and graphics that I could show that I get in my email inbox, and it talks about, you know, that we're getting later freezes and we're getting less snow and all of that sort of thing. And that's all very true. But what I want all of these listeners to understand is that if I were to go on the air and do that, which I would like to do, but it's just, in a lot of ways, it's almost like yelling fire in a crowded movie house. People are going to lose their minds if I get on that, because you're going to have some people that are going to email me and say, thank you for doing that. And then you're going to have other people that are going to say that I'm full of you know what, and this is all a hoax. And I've heard the same arguments about the media on both sides, that it's giving good information or that it's not giving enough information or whatever the case may be. And therein lies the problem. There's a lot of bad stuff out there on both sides.
Okay. And thank you, Bennett, for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest, and we'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Rick Orlando's New World Home Cooking, Saugerties, New York. Since 1993, hosting a New Year's Eve buffet and dance party, newworldhomecooking.com for reservations. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the documentary Joaquin Prinz, I Shall Not Be Silent, in honor of Martin Luther King Day, Monday, January 15th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai, 518-584-8730 for reservations. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang. And Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 15 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins, grapesandgrainswine.com.
Thank you, boys. And that's Les Brown and his band of renown.
Very good.
Thank you very much. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. And Jason Goff is our expert guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And before we get back to the calls, this email came in from Peter. Where do we get oxygen in the winter? No leaves.
Where do we get oxygen? That's an
good question.
How long have we been doing the show? A long time. I've never heard such a question.
Simple and direct. Where do we get the oxygen?
The oxygen is in the atmosphere. That's just where it is.
Okay.
It's about 22% by volume, that's it. The rest is nitrogen and a bunch of other stuff.
All right. We'll let that one go, and let's go to Don in Red Hook. Don, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about the equinox and solstice. I celebrate all four every year.
Awesome.
I just wondered how I celebrate is taking a walk. But however, is there any way to get a sense it is happening, or I just have my imagination to visualize it's happening?
Well, it's all done by calculations, and that's more of an astronomy thing than it is anything else. And so that's how, you know, and I've had this question asked of me many times, and it's a great question. You know, how is it that we can tell that there's going to be a solar eclipse in 2024, when it's going to be, where it's going to be, but we can't forecast more than 3 days out? two completely different systems. The atmosphere is an open system. Space is a closed system. So that's a kind of a short answer or long answer to a short question. So it's all done by that. Now, as far as being able to actually physically sense when the solstice or the equinox is going, I don't know a whole lot about that. I can tell you that standing the egg on its end, that's a myth, a hoax thing.
You ever go to Stonehenge on the solstice?
I know that's a myth.
Yeah. So as far as that goes, you know, that people were always, oh, you can do it right at that exact time, but that's not the case.
Have you tried?
I actually have tried, and I've done it before and after, and it just sort of it has to do with the shape of the egg, not anything else.
All right, fair enough.
I would like to go to Stonehenge. That would be
awesome. Let's go to Stonehenge on the equinox.
Yes.
Hey, Don, thanks a lot for that one. We appreciate it. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is the guest today. David in Monson, Mass. David, you're on.
Well, hello, Jason and Ray.
Hi.
How are you today?
Fine, sir.
In the mornings on WAMC, I catch my forecast before I go into work.
Ah, yes.
And many times I'll hear something like up in the Inuit territory that it's minus 35 and ice crystals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What
are the ice crystals?
Basically, that's a good question. It's sometimes you'll see on an observation, even around here, not way the heck up there where it's really cold, but around here you'll see things that'll say like freezing fog.
Yeah.
So fog is basically a cloud that's on the ground, right? And you have water droplets that are in there. When the air gets really cold, you can get these super cool droplets, and they will actually freeze up, and you can get a couple of different types of things. You can get freezing fog. Which makes everything really slick, as you might imagine, that not necessarily the roads, although that can happen, but then you can also get things like what's called rime. You see that a lot up. If you follow any of the folks up at the Mount Washington Observatory, they have that up there all the time. So basically, it's basically frozen dew, if you want to think of it like that. And then you can, or even some of those shows. What was the one show out on the Discovery Channel where they're catching crabs and all that out in the Bering Sea and whatever the heck that is? But you'll see freezing spray warnings. So it's basically that things, any kind of moisture that's liquid will freeze on contact, or it will actually freeze in the air.
Huh.
And then there's even one other thing that you can get that's a lot more unusual. It's called hoarfrost, H-O-A-R, frost. And those are almost like they almost look like little snowflakes. They're little crystals that kind of hang off of, especially things like plants.
Huh.
So it all has to do really with the temperature, the ambient temperature, and how much moisture is in the air.
David, thank you for the call. My grasp of physics is extremely limited.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on a mountain and you have a cloud that is basically on the ground and it has turned to ice, doesn't the whole thing just collapse and drop to the ground? Doesn't ice fall to the ground?
No, it can stay suspended in the air because you're talking about little crystals, and all you need is maybe just a little bit of the air moving around. It wouldn't necessarily be windy because that would then disperse it. But just anything that you can where you have these really light little particles and they are suspended in the air.
All right, this one came in from John via email. Why does the air get colder as elevation over the Earth's surface increases?
The short answer to that is that the sun does not directly heat the air. The sun heats the ground, and then it radiates the heat back up. So as you're up into the mountains, you have less air, and you have less warming going on because you have less surface area than, say, a city street or even a big cornfield or something like that. So as you go up in elevation, things tend to get cooler because you don't have as much radiation going on, or re-radiation, as it were.
But then how does an inversion happen?
Inversions happen when, typically, the higher up in the sky you go, the colder it gets. So inversions happen. We see them a lot in the spring and in the fall. Now, even at times, you can get an inversion. And that's basically where you just have a stubborn layer of cold air that just doesn't want to move. And then you have warmer air coming in, usually with some kind of a warm front. It can be challenging to forecast, especially when you're talking about forecasting for a place like Grafton or in the Berkshires or in Catskill, because you're talking about different elevations. So, you know, you can have times when the higher elevations will actually be warmer, but that's a function of warmer air that's coming in and nothing else.
And it won't then warm up the cold air?
And it won't warm, no, because the cold air is dense, is more dense, so the warmer air sits basically right on top of it.
I'll be darned. All right, back to the phones we go. Jason Goff, our guest. Carol Ann in Connecticut. Carol Ann, you're on.
Hi there, Jason. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I spent about a year down in Corpus Christi, Texas, one year, and got there in December, didn't leave until October, and it was one incredibly hot time. It was 70 plus degrees in December, and it never, by the summertime, it was 110, 115 every day. The humidity was overwhelming.
Do you
never rained till October? They kept saying, "Well, we're in a drought." How is that possible?
That is a great question. Did you know, by the way, that was my first TV job, was in Corpus Christi, Texas?
Did not know that. Great
yes.
area. Nice people.
So I lived there for 3.5 years, and what was amazing to me when I first got there is that cold fronts, they quit showing up in about April, and they don't come again until September. So
that's easy to predict.
Well, and let me tell you something. I was working mornings at the time, doing a 2-hour morning show when the weather doesn't change for weeks on end. That's a challenge.
Yeah.
The prevailing wind direction in Corpus is out of the southeast, and you get a lot of humidity there. And the only way that you can get rain, it goes back to another caller that was asking about the summertime thunderstorms. You want to see some serious rain? Holy cow, that has got it going on, because you typically will get upper-level storms that will come diving either through West Texas or even up out of the Sierra Madre in Mexico, and it'll tap into all of that moisture. And you could stand in a shower and not get as wet as you could if you were standing outside in some of these storms. It's amazing.
Well, Carol Ann, thank you for the call. Jason Goff is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. John in St. Johnsville. John, you're on.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I've got a very interesting situation here. We have, we're on top of a hill about 700 feet above our town.
Mm-hmm.
The town is about 4 miles away and has a major railroad in it, or railroad tracks in it. When we're going to be getting rain or snow, within 24 hours of that storm coming, we can hear the train, and it sounds like it's in our yard.
Hmm.
But otherwise, we don't hear it.
I love this question.
So if there's no rain, we do not hear it. Wouldn't even know there's railroad tracks anywhere near us.
That's brilliant.
That's interesting. That's a very good question. I'm not an acoustics expert. I know that air density, and because you read about this and hear about this with submarines too, and that's, you know, because they can listen to other things that are going on below the surface, and it has to do with the water temperature and all of that. So translating that into air, because air is a fluid like water, when you have a storm that's coming, your air pressure is going to lessen.
Right.
Right. So you have better opportunity for, just think about it as, I don't know. I think that just slipped out of my mind. But basically, you're allowing the sound to slip through easier because the air pressure isn't as great. It's not being suppressed.
I wonder if it's a function of humidity, greater humidity. In other words, in space, you see these space movies and there's an explosion and you hear it. You'll never hear an explosion in space because there is no air. And so I wonder if there is more density to the air, more moisture, you're hearing more reverberation.
Well, actually, when you have more water vapor in the air is less dense.
Interesting.
So, you know, I've heard it out on the golf course, you know, playing in the summertime where it's just hot and humid and somebody hits a bad shot and they say, oh, it's because the air is heavy. Actually, this is about as light as the air gets around here. That was just a crummy golf shot. I don't know what to tell you.
John, go ahead.
We were thinking density also. And the one part that did bother us on it is it's accurate, whereas a forecast may say we're going to have a wonderful day the next day or next 2 days. And we'll get poured on.
That's interesting.
I knew it because of the train. I mean, I've cut hay, so I know we have to watch the weather constantly.
Of course.
And the trains have been more accurate than, you know, AccuWeather and the weather forecast.
No, that's so very. And you're out in
curious.
You're out in Western Montgomery County. Is that right? out in St. John's?
We're actually in Fulton County.
Oh,
we're
in Fulton
across the line into Fulton.
Okay.
So, we're on top of the hill.
Interesting. Well, that's a great question.
That is brilliant. And I know there are times when I can hear ships down at the port from my home or trains that are 5-6 miles away much more clearly. Now I'm going to try to tie it in with weather conditions
there
the next
go.
Day.
Yep.
That was a good call. Our number is 800-348-2551. We go over to Greg in East Meredith. Greg.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Great show.
Thank you.
I have a quick comment and then my question. My comment goes all the way back to the guy that was talking about beliefs. And I'm a retired professor from CUNY. I used to taught 25 years worth of evolutionary biology. That question always came up, that phrase, do you believe in evolution?
Right.
You know, and I would say, well, do you believe in photosynthesis? You know, there's about as much evidence, or do you believe in mitosis? Anyway, it just fascinates me that you do. That is so erroneous to say, and it's just
right. And going back to that other point, there was a teacher in this was the 1920s in Tennessee who was actually thrown in jail for teaching evolution, and you know, so that gets to more of a philosophical thing. So you're right, yes, sir. So I'm sorry, what was your question?
Oh, my question is, I don't know if this is a real phenomenon, but I've noticed in the summertime, it'll be anywhere I've lived. There'll be a nice breeze blowing, you know, during the afternoon, and it's a hot day, and then the evening comes. I throw open the windows, and it seems like the breeze just stops.
Yes.
And I don't know. It seems like that happens so often, and the trees are motionless. The leaves are still, and I'm like, is it something to do with the temperature, the local wind? Like, I'm wondering, why is that a real phenomenon, or is it just something that I seem to...
It is, and I'll, you know, I mean, wind is caused by differences in pressure, but if you think about it from the temperature side of things, just for our purposes here, so, like, if you are, I'll give you a smaller scale example. If you have a shower that doesn't have the glass doors, but it has the shower curtain in the wintertime, and you have the shower really hot, and you'll notice the shower curtain moves, that's a function of a temperature difference. In Florida, the reason that the state of Florida gets thunderstorms every day from basically Tampa up through Orlando is because of the sea breeze effect, because you have a sea breeze coming in from both sides, so the air rises up into the atmosphere. It's the old water cycle, and that's how you get that going. So here's the thing. So imagine in Florida, right, you have the sand gets hotter than the water does in the morning. So that air rises, and you don't live in a vacuum, nor, you know, so you're never in a place where there's no air. So air is coming in off of the sea, that's called the sea breeze, to replace the air that's rising. Now, as those temperature differences come down, you will actually get an offshore wind at night along the coast, but then certainly by the morning, there's like no wind, and that's because your temperature differences have been tamped down quite a bit. So when you're talking, now those are localized effects, you know, even though Florida is a state, but it's still a localized kind of a deal. So you think of it like that. So it is a difference in air pressure, but that air pressure difference is kind of stoked by temperature differences. Does that make sense? Okay.
Makes sense. Great answer. I always thought there was something to it.
Well, you were right.
Greg, thanks a lot for the call. Okay, Jason Goff, let's take one more, and then I want to talk to you about wine for a minute here.
Oh, so another favorite subject of mine.
Let's quickly go to Bill in Gilboa. Bill, you got about 30 seconds.
My question is about the water table in the Northeast and with the severity and change in the weather patterns and the severity in the storms. I'm just wondering about rebuilding the ice cap. I know the ice cap's melting, and that contributes a great deal to the water table in the Northeast because it flows downhill.
Okay.
Yeah, not really. We're talking about two different things as far as the polar ice caps are a part that, you know, you're talking about the Arctic.
Yeah.
And we're a lot farther away from that. Now, whether or not they're underground rivers and things like that, obviously there are aquifers and stuff, but our water table here is a function of the amount of rain that we get. Because, you know, and certainly you have spring-fed things and all of that, but it all has to do with the rain that we've got. Yes,
all right, listen, you were on the show many months ago. We did a bit about wine.
Yes.
A TV show that you're doing. Tell me what's up with that.
Well, we're going to start shooting in May.
Oh, you got another round coming up.
We have another round coming up. I'm very excited about it.
The show is called?
It's called Wine About the Weather.
It's a fine show.
Thank you very much. I've only done four episodes, and so we have a lot of exciting things coming that I will certainly keep you posted on. And if you want to have me on here, we can talk about
it, too. Talk about wine?
We could talk about wine. We could talk about the beautiful state of New York. We have 14 episodes planned all across the state.
So you go to different vineyards around the state, from Long Island out to the western portion of the state?
From Lake Erie to the Thousand Islands over to the Hudson Valley. The Upper Hudson Valley Wine Trail was just designated an AVA, an American Viticultural area, which is great. So we'll be visiting those folks, and then all the way down through even New York City and Urban Winery, and then on from there to Long Island.
Jason
Yes, sir.
Goff, you're a multi-talented renaissance man. Thanks
Thank
for being
you.
Here, my friend. Support comes from Dr. Schnuffies, providing high-potency vitamin herbal tablets for flu season colds, formulated by a local doctor with natural immune-boosting ingredients, available at many co-ops from Albany to Boston. GetWellFormulas.com. The Hyde Collection, Glens Falls, this season featuring a distinguished selection of folk art from the collection of Barbara L. Gordon. HydeCollection.org. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. And Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst-Belchertown line, located by the side of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com. Thanks again to Jason Goff for stopping by today. Thank you for some terrific calls and some great emails. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Your phones were answered by Carol Lapani. Our producer is Jimmy the Hammer Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, Gordon Fricke joins us to answer your automotive questions. Right now, stand by for news.